Poised for Exit is a show for business owners who want to achieve a successful future exit based on their own terms. Your business exit will likely be the biggest financial transaction of your life, and for most, you'll have one shot at doing it right. The topic and guests we feature and the stories they share will provide valuable ideas and strategies to improve operations and grow enterprise value so you can achieve the best possible exit outcome. Now here's your host, Julie Keyes.
Welcome everyone to Poised for Exit, the podcast show for business owners. Today we're going to be talking with a prominent Twin Cities business attorney about some business owner cases that he's been working on recently that really could have gone much better. And we're going to hear those stories, as we call horror stories, especially since we're so close to Halloween, right after this. Soon we're going to talk about the Business Transition Readiness Program first, and then we'll introduce our guest.
Do you know what it means to be transition ready? Does the thought of your future business exit bring on feelings of anxiety? If so, you are not alone. In the Business Transition Readiness Program, you'll find the answers to these questions and many more. According to award-winning certified exit planner Julie Keyes, it takes at least 5 years to prepare an owner and a business for a future exit. The Business Transition Readiness Program will help you unpack the complexities of exit and transition planning, shed light on the unknowns, and help prepare you and your business to exit on your own terms and not someone else's. You can get more info and register for upcoming programs at poisedforexit.com. Just click on Owner Program.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today with Jeff O'Brien, who's a partner at Chestnut Cambrone in Minneapolis. Jeff, it's great to have you with us today. Welcome to Poised for Exit.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that you are no stranger to being a podcaster, so I just appreciate you being here. It's really good to have someone with your experience on the show. I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have heard you on the Bob Sansevier show, and so it's just great to have you here. We're going to have some interesting things to talk about today. I know that you've had some recent cases that you've been working on. We could call them horror stories, right? In line with with approaching Halloween, it kind of fits. But business owners are always interested in hearing about what other business owners are going through. And since you're the expert when it comes to, you know, working with business owners, especially in the area of business law, I'm hoping that my business owner listeners are really engaged and that they're taking good notes, because I know that you're going to deliver some great content. But before we get to that, I would just like to have you share a little bit about yourself, how you got started in your career, and then we'll go into the questions.
Sure. So I've been, you mentioned I'm at Chestnut Cambrone in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I've been practicing now, actually, believe it or not, tomorrow will be the 20th anniversary of my being admitted to the bar in the state of Minnesota. So what? I can now say after tomorrow, I can say it's been 20 years.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. And I've always practiced, I do transactional law. I try to minimize how much time I go to court. I have people to send handle the stuff in court. Mm-hmm. But I do a lot of business formations, partnership agreements, buy sells, day-to-day, advising of small businesses and their owners. I've done some real estate stuff, and I've done some estate planning as well. So I kind of try to cater to the small business owner and their business throughout the life of their business and then beyond. So, you know, when you and I first met several months ago, you know, we kind of both play in the same space with exit strategies. And yeah. I know that a lot of the stuff that I deal with, you talk about in your book too, in terms of, you know, what is the proper way to do, you know, some different strategies and how's the right way to do it. The problem is, unfortunately, is that so many people, not enough people come for advice as how to do that. And so the other thing that I handle a lot is we do handle some disputes between owners and having to do some exit strategies that may be what I call forced or involuntary, sometimes in court, sometimes otherwise. And so, I've seen it when it's been good, and I've seen it when it's been bad.
I'm sure you have. Gosh, we could probably be here all day listening to stories, and I know you've got some for us. Mm-hmm. I think that I think I shared with you before when we were talking about coming on the show. You had said something about talking about buy sell agreements, and I think that that's a great topic to cover. We have covered that topic before in this show, but not from the angle that you're covering. And there's so much to say about that particular document and how important it is. I know that there is a term called a Texas shootout. And mm-hmm. so when we're talking about exit strategy and we're talking about contentious situations, it seems to me from the provisions I've read that a Texas shootout is based on a situation that could be contentious. So could you just speak to that for a second?
Yeah, a Texas shootout, you know, when you, in terms of, you know, we're talking about buy-sell agreements, you know, as you know, Julie, there's the standard clauses, the triggers mm-hmm. for a buy-sell event, you know, someone, a member, owner attempts to transfer their shares to somebody else, involuntary transfer such as divorce or bankruptcy, death, disability, mm-hmm. sometimes termination of employment, all of those things.
Right.
There's, generally speaking, there's not necessarily a clause in a buy-sell agreement that says, if you're unhappy, you can leave. And right. We can force the company to buy your shares, right?
Yes.
But this Texas shootout provision is that kind of a provision, and which is why when we use it, we use it very carefully. Mm. So what a Texas shootout provision is a clause. It's a clause in a buy sell agreement that says that one owner can make an offer to sell their shares to the other owner. Or owners. Mm-hmm. This usually happens in a deadlock situation. This is usually you use it when you've got 50-50 ownership of with a two-person ownership group, okay? Because it usually involves when you get to the deadlock, because then the deadlocks end up in court and it's expensive. So that this is seen as an anti-deadlock provision. Mm-hmm. So what the provision says is the one owner can make an offer to sell their shares to the other owner, and they specify the price and the terms and all of those things in the written offer, and they deliver that. The agreement will specify how that offer is to be communicated to the other owner, and then the other owner has a certain period of time, whatever the agreement specifies, in which they can either accept that offer and purchase their partner's shares, or they can turn around and say, I will sell you my shares on the same price and terms that you offered me. So at the end of the day, what you get to with a Texas shootout clause is you end up with one owner of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is selling to the other one, thereby breaking the deadlock. So that's, I don't know where it became called a Texas shootout. that's what it refers to, is this very specific, unique clause that allows one owner to either force the other owner to buy them out or to sell to them.
So that's the magic word then, forced, because what I was thinking to myself when you were explaining this is that it kind of sounds like right of first refusal, but it's not.
You know, it isn't. This is different because, you know, with right of first refusal, it's predicated on you having a third party that's willing to purchase the shares, right?
Right.
Here,
yes.
This mm-hmm. is just a transaction between the two owners of the company.
Got it.
There's no outside party that has to be involved to trigger this particular provision if it's included in the buy-sell agreement.
So this particular clause needs to be in the buy-sell agreement ahead of time then. This isn't something that you like draft an addendum for it.
Correct. Yeah, it's something that, you know, if I do include it, it's the client is asking for this to be included at the outset. So if I have a client that has that they're going to be 50-50, we talk about how do you intend to break a deadlock? And so we discuss some different ways of doing it, and that one usually is the one that gets settled on if you have that 50-50 ownership. And I have to say, a lot of my clients have done away with the 50-50 ownership. Somebody always seems to have majority control, mm-hmm. or you might have multiple owners, and so that somebody can always be outvoted, right?
Yes.
But this 50-50 ownership situation, you know, is when we do this, and we include it in the operating agreement if it's an LLC. We include it in a shareholder control agreement if it's a corporation. That's usually where we find our buy sell provisions these days. Sometimes we still call them buy-sell agreements, but more likely than not, you find it's an article in one of those agreements, you know, with everything in there. So in terms of, we have to kind of be careful about, you have to always think about when you're an attorney, you always have to think about how it could go wrong. Right.
Exactly.
And how it, and I had seen this go wrong. So I had a client many years ago where we were dealing with a Texas shootout provision. We had not drafted it. We were helping advise our client as to how to exercise the provision that was there. And so we crafted our written offer and was communicated to the other owner. And I think it was a period of say 30 days in which the other owner had to make the decision. Well, what the other owner did, and this was one where it wasn't necessarily a 50-50. They had just included this clause, and the other owner took all sorts of actions to lock our client out of their email and repay deferred compensation. And basically, and at the end of the 30 days said, okay, you can buy me out. Mm. And instead of me buying you out. And we actually had a litigation over it. So I said, you essentially wrapped the car around the tree and then handed us the keys. No thanks. and so they eventually settled it, but it's a good example of if this isn't drafted carefully enough.
Yes.
Somebody could in when it actually gets used, it could be abused, and that's why we use this very sparingly. But it is a method when you have that 50-50 ownership. In my opinion, it's still probably a less expensive course than having to try to break the partnership up in court.
Mm-hmm. So basically, then the magic words for this when it comes to using this clause is when there's a 50-50 situation, which
yep.
I know I've heard you say you don't see it as much. I'm sure you don't recommend it. I know I don't, and I'm not even a lawyer. But usually when I come into the picture, everything is already together and formed, and they're having their arguments because they're 30 years down the road. And, oh, by the way, we don't have a buy-sell agreement. We formed this partnership on a handshake. And, yes, it's 50-50. So, right? So then you're unraveling quite a bit,
yep.
aren't you? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you're putting in an agreement later on in the life of the business, you're probably not including this. If there's already tension amongst the owners, mm-hmm. they're certainly not going to, basically hand a gun to their partner.
Well, and there's going to be other areas for contention as well, right? Besides just who's going to take control over who. It's how do we value the business? We don't have a buy-sell that articulates what method we're going to use. And so there's all those issues that arise as well. So tell me about what are the pros and cons of actually using this in a buy-sell agreement?
Well, the pros of using a Texas shootout clause, Julie, like I just said, it's a quicker resolution, especially right now with how backed up our courts are with COVID.
Good point.
It's a quicker resolution to a deadlock than if you were having to go to in front of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly provides, like any sort of buy sell provision, it provides some certainty. In terms of how such a dispute in terms of a deadlock would be handled,
mm-hmm.
because it's all laid out in the agreement.
Yes.
A buy sell is in some ways, I always say it's a business prenuptial agreement.
Yes.
In other ways, it's also alternative dispute resolution rather than go to court. You're choosing to do this. So that would be the pros of it is having the certainty of a result. And having the, avoiding court. The cons of it would be the example I laid out is no matter how well this clause can be drafted, human nature being what it is, there's a potential that something could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody taking, doing something in that intervening time where they have the time to decide what to want to do. And then creating more of an issue and then ultimately ending up in court, no matter what. Or you could have some kind of an issue in terms of if the clause is not drafted properly, which this is one of those, my motto is always when it comes to legal work, DIY equals SOL. This is certainly something that want as a business owner to be doing yourself, putting agreement together and trying to write this out. If you're going to try to include something like this, it's absolutely imperative that you go to an attorney who knows what the heck they're doing.
Oh.
Otherwise, if it's not drafted right, you could still end up in court.
Absolutely. It reminds me of an exercise that we did with the Exit Planning Institute chapter in the Twin Cities a few years ago. I'm still remembering this particular meeting that we had. I used to run the chapter. And one of the things that we did with the whole group was we split everybody up, and everybody was assigned to a table and assigned to a table leader who happened to be an M&A attorney or a business attorney. And everyone was given a copy of a buy-sell agreement and a checklist. And they had to go through the buy-sell and pick out all of the bad things and things that were missing and follow the checklist so that they, you know, could, obviously nobody was an attorney except for the table leader, but then come up with solutions. And we learned a ton. Everybody did, because there's so many things that you need to make sure that are included. So it's the stuff that's not in there too, right, that can cause a lot of upheaval. But let's move on for a second. I want to talk about, you know, we're talking about ownership, and ownership is such a big deal for entrepreneurs, isn't it? I mean,
yes, it is.
Yeah. And so minority shareholders, there's plenty of them out there. And and I'm wondering, is there ever a time when you recommend to a client or someone who seeks your advice where they've been given an opportunity to become a minority shareholder? When do you ever recommend that versus, say, for instance, phantom stock or some other form of compensation?
If I'm representing the minority owner, I'm probably more inclined to advocate for it. If I have a client that's considering, let's say they want to do a class of stock for their employees, then I'm usually on the side of advocating against it for the reason that just because, like you said, ownership means something. Ownership is important. And, you know, you can put so much into a written agreement amongst owners, but then you have these statutes. You have, if it's a corporation, you have a statute for that, for those entities. If it's a LLC, you have a statute for those. And there's all sorts of rights and responsibilities attached to ownership that are laid out in those statutes that apply no matter what the agreement says.
Yes. And
that's where you have to be careful.
Right, for sure. So, you know, I'm obviously I represent the business owner myself, you know, as their consultant, as their exit planner, just like you do from the legal side. So I'm generally not going to be representing an employee. But I do believe, I mean, I've been an employer, I've been an entrepreneur most of my entire life, and I understand that it's important to make sure that you share the value of the enterprise with your key people. You know, some people call that key employee retention. Sometimes that's a matter of figuring out how to let them share in the upside. And, you know, does that mean that we issue shares? Does that mean we turn the company into an ESOP? Does that mean that we, you know, issue phantom stock? Does that mean that we, you know, start a corporate investment account? But there's, gosh, a lot of ways that you can keep people and make them happy and compensate them for, you know, what they have coming without having to give up any ownership. But people do it. Business owners do it. And so I'd like to have you talk about that minority shareholder. Do you think that there's going to be a lot of forced exits, you know, coming into the... I know that you probably got some scenarios that you could share on that.
I'm actually working on some forced exits right now. Yeah. So there are... When you have a situation where you have where you're a minority owner, and let's say that you don't have any sort of a clause in your buy-sell agreement, or that you don't have a buy-sell agreement, that would otherwise allow you to sell your shares or force the company or the other owners to buy you out. There are provisions in statutes, both with corporations and with LLCs and with partnerships, if you still have a general partnership, that would allow a minority owner to go into court for an action that would ultimately result in a buyout of their interest. And there's some key language that the statutes reference in terms of that. You know, for a corporation, you can go in with a motion to dissolve the company, or alternatively to force a buyout of the owner's shares. You know, we have the deadlock situation that was one, and there are some other situations. But in this context, Julie, the one that is important is where the directors or those in control of the corporation have acted in a manner unfairly prejudicial toward one or more shareholders. So you have a situation, I'm dealing with one right now, where I've got three owners. They all own a third. I represent one owner who owns a third, and we're having some issues. And I'm using the threat of this type of an action as leverage to obtain a voluntary separation and a buyout of that client's interest. So there is a mechanism, and then there's in the LLC law in Minnesota, there's another mechanism where they talk about the owners engaging in oppressive conduct.
Yeah.
So it starts out as a motion to dissolve the company, but can convert into a judge ordering the forced buyout of an owner's interest, which if you're the majority owner, that's got to keep you up at night because, you know, there's no agreement in place. You have a judge that's going to order someone to perform a valuation of the business mm-hmm. for purposes of determining what the business has, the other owners have to pay. You know, that's not, courts usually aren't in the business of doing that. That's about as dangerous as a Texas shootout clause.
Yes.
So again, highlighting all the reasons why a buy-sell agreement is just so important, because you know these horror stories that I've dealt with over the years could have been avoided with a properly drafted buy-sell agreement.
Yeah, there's another story, right, for the history books for you to be able to share with people. I think that we as human beings are wired for stories. I've said that many times in my show. I try to encourage my guests, just like you have, sharing some stories. I think we learn the best from them, and then we can kind of see many times our own life reflected in the stories that we hear. So let's talk a little bit about the future of M&A, the future of particularly minority shareholders and forced exits and things like that. Do you think that because of the pandemic that we may be seeing more of these types of situations where business owners, majority owners, are just going to throw their hands up and go, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't care if my, you know, partners and minority shareholders want to get out. I want to get out. Do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, and I think it's coming down to depending on how the age of the business owner, right? I think if you're 60 years of age or north of that, and you're still owning a business, particularly you know a business that maybe it was in retail or hospitality that got hit really hard by the pandemic, I think that those owners are giving some real serious thought to whether or not they want to be involved with this and do that anymore. If they just want to cash out and move on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think any minority owner that's in a business that might be struggling right now may want to look for the exits as well. And so they, you know, so I think you could be seeing more. I think I'm going to see more activity on this front, particularly if they don't have some sort of agreement in place.
Yes.
To transition. I also will see, and I've seen this in recent years, back to giving ownership to an employee. There have been instances where I've had a client that was the sole owner of a company, or maybe a group of individuals that were the sole owners that brought in an employee, a key employee, as a owner and entered into a buy sell with them immediately as a means of setting up that exit strategy for them, that they brought in the key employee with the expectation that that employee is going to eventually buy them out and take over the business. So the buy sell can be a very good tool to create that succession plan. And two, again, if it's done properly.
Exactly.
I think we're going to see a lot of activity in the next couple of years based on what we've gone through this year.
I agree 100%. So what I like to ask my guests to share, and I'm going to ask you the same because we're getting to the point of the show where we got to wrap up, but a couple of action items. What are a couple things that our business owner clients who are with us listening, what can they do in this situation or in these situations, or what can they do to prevent them? What are your action steps?
Sure. Well, not surprisingly, number one on my list is make sure that you have a good business attorney and that you're in communication with them. I always tell clients, you may be seeing something one time. We see the same thing many times and can help guide you through this. So number one, make sure that you have a good business attorney, and also being, you know, communicating with them, but also get a regular audit of your corporate documents, meet with your attorney, you know, at least annually, or email them or talk to them by phone. And if something changes in the business, you know, let them know so that we can only do what we know from our clients.
Right.
So we want to be able to keep those documents, those corporate documents. They're almost like an estate plan for your business. You know, those aren't just a one-time thing and you're done. Sometimes you have to revisit those. In the last few years, when Minnesota changed its LLC law, we did a lot of redrafting of buy-sell agreements by putting in new operating agreements. And we were finding provisions that were originally included in some of these documents that weren't pertinent anymore. So we just got rid of them. So it's always good to get a checkup every once in a while. And most business attorneys, I'm one of them, we're going to spend about an hour of time and aren't going to charge you just to take a look through the documents to see if anything needs to be updated. And then we'll tell you how much we're going to charge you to fix it.
And hopefully, you know, if they're seeing you on a regular basis, then there is a lot less to fix. So being proactive,
exactly.
Right? Being proactive tends
exactly.
to be a lot more cost effective than having
That's
to be
exactly
reactive.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That if we have to fight one of these shareholder disputes, it'll be the fees will be exponentially greater mm-hmm. than had they been paying us all along the way to be their, you know, their day-to-day general counsel.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. All right. So Jeff, what is the best way for people to get a hold of you?
You can Google, sorry, it'll be Chestnut Cambrone. It's Chestnut Cambrone, Cambronne, .com. My phone number at the office, 612-336-1298. I can be emailed at jobryan@cclawmn.com. Or if you just Google me, you'll find me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm out there. I make myself accessible.
You are out there. And I love that you share your knowledge so well and so often with the folks up here in the Twin Cities and abroad, I'm sure. So thanks so much for joining me today, Jeff. It's been super informative, of course. And for our listeners, this episode will be available for download on the Poised for Exit website, as usual. And that website address is poisedforexit.com, where you can also get a copy of the book, Poised for Exit. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. We really appreciate your listenership. And thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.